Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. There were beautiful stars out this morning, and it's one of the benefits of getting up early. We get to see the constellations on a clear morning like this. And as we all know, the election is just 4 days away. It's hard to believe the campaign is finally coming to an end, particularly for those of us here in Iowa who have been hit with campaigning for the last 2 years. Many people have already voted in early voting or with absentee ballots, and we'll be hearing about efforts made to assist residents of local nursing homes and assisted living facilities to cast their ballots. But first, we have our monthly visit from Susan Guiazda, the Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Hello, Susan.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. And we have Rudy Castor, who's also with us. Rudy is a civil engineer with the City of Ames. Good morning.
Good morning, Gail.
So let's get started. I guess we're going to start with you, Rudy, to give everyone the long-awaited road update.
Yes, and talking with Susan, it sounds like this will probably be my last update for the season. So, yay, we're the finish line is near.
Okay, so people are probably glad to hear that.
Yes, they are. We are definitely wrapping up construction projects here in Ames, and with this beautiful weather we've kind of had coming into November, contractors are definitely working and scrambling, trying to get those last-minute jobs wrapped up. A couple projects we do have continuing out in the Wellens area. We're still chipping away on a couple more blocks, Wellens Drive and Harris Street, really what we have left there to take out for pavement and put back. Have wrapped up several blocks out there. So it's been a large project, and the finish line is very close on that one. So residents are happy to see that and hear that, I'm sure.
And could you remind people why you rip up roads and then put them back down? They might wonder that.
We definitely don't just do it for inconvenience purposes. There definitely is a purpose behind that. You know, the condition of the pavement has deteriorated to the point where we actually need to remove that pavement and put down a new concrete or asphalt street that really is something that is reliable and a smooth ride for our residents so they can get to and from home, work, and other places. So,
okay.
Yes. And then so we're definitely getting very close on a North 2nd Street between Hazel and Maple, wrapping that project up as well. We have the mainline paving done, just some tie-ins with driveways and some sidewalk work and backfilling, and we'll be pretty much wrapped up with that one as well. And we recently just finished Clark Avenue, and that is open to traffic as well. We actually opted to not carry into the second phase, which would have been the Union Railroad tracks to Lincoln Way portion.
Okay, so that stretch that was closed by Main Street and Clark is now open.
Yep. So okay. The project entirely is Lincoln Way to Main, and we only completed the north half. And kind of discussing with the contractor, we really don't know here how many days we ultimately will have left for favorable weather. So we definitely wanted to make sure we had a hard surface for winter weather and for snow plowing purposes. So we opted to just kind of be a little reserved on that one and tackle that other half in the spring of 2017. So,
yep. Okay.
And then a couple projects, you know, just kind of an FYI for the community for next year, some major arterial streets that we'll be doing some pavement improvements on, South 3rd, South 4th Street, from the Squaw Creek Bridge to South Duff Avenue. Fairly lengthy stretch there, so that'll be a project we're going to get started with as early as we can in the spring of 2017 so that we can have it substantially completed and wrapped up by the time we have fall weather and Iowa State football games and the game day traffic that utilizes that in and out route to the stadium.
Yeah, most people will recognize that as a major arterial, as a Cyride route,
yep.
Maybe a way they get to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a lot of input into how they phase that project.
Yep. And then another one, Lincoln Way out by County Line Road. We're doing a portion out there of mill and overlay, a new asphalt surface layer out there. So that one probably not as lengthy of a project, but still will be a slight interruption to traffic as folks come in and out from the west side of Ames. So
Okay. That's
really all I have, Gail. I mean, that's, like I said, we're wrapping up, and it's great to have a short update when it comes to road construction, especially this time of year. So.
Well, I think it's good to that you come on once a month and have been giving people that update, because I know people can get very frustrated, maybe sometimes overly frustrated or needlessly frustrated.
Sure.
When they encounter these or wonder, why isn't this open yet? So
yep.
it's good to get the prognosis, so to speak, and now they know that they'll have other things to contend with on roads, like snow and ice and weather, but not construction for a couple months.
Yes.
So your comment about why certain roads are torn up and why they're not, there is really a science to this, and it involves a lot of evaluation. Public Works spends a lot of time looking at street conditions. They have special equipment. Rudy, why don't you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we definitely we partner with Iowa DOT in collecting pavement data.
Basically
the condition of the pavement. We actually have a formula, and we have a van that drives the roads and collects all different aspects of the condition of that pavement. It gives it a rating, and we take that in consideration along with, like Susan said, condition of actually underground utilities, you know, your wastewater collection system, your water distribution system, your storm sewer collection system as well. Like we're considering all, you know, across the board aspects or assets of the city in that public right of way so that we can minimize the inconvenience. Granted, yes, it is an inconvenience, but we want to try to minimize that and get in there and accomplish as much as we can while we're there so we can only have to be there once every few decades, really, is the goal. So, yep.
Okay. Well, that's good to know that it's all scientifically analyzed. The recent flooding, did that give you any more information that now you have to pay attention to? Or
it definitely some locations popped up. We have some localized flooding. Of course, our storm sewer systems. Our design year is really not meant for a 6 hour or a 6 inch rain in half an hour to an hour's time. I mean, those are just really isolated and unique situations where we just are challenged in that aspect. But we definitely are taking that information from the residents and are looking into possibly some further investigation work in areas where they did experience some of that localized flooding. Sure.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, thanks again.
You're welcome.
So we'll turn to Susan now, and you're going to walk us through kind of a chronology of what's happening in Ames that people need to know about.
Sure. It's November, great. And it's always a great opportunity for me to talk a little bit about what's happening around the city in November. Once again, it's going to be a busy month. We've got a lot of things going on. Even today, as we speak, Friday, November 4th, we have a ribbon cutting for a park, Greenbrier Park, which is on South 16th Street. People might recognize that as being close to the Ames Christian School or across the street from the Vet Med area. It was a passive park for many years. It was just some prairie area and a trailhead. But as that area has developed and there's more children in the area, Laverne Apartments are right next door. The Parks and Recreation Department got input from the Laverne Apartments on what they would like to see in the park. They picked a really lovely playground structure to put in that park, and Woodruff Construction, one of our local construction companies, in celebration of their 60th anniversary, helped with some donated labor and materials.
Wonderful.
To put a little shelter up at that park and to do some concrete work. So there is a little small parking lot there and some playground equipment. We sodded and seeded it this fall, and it's all come together. So today at noon, the community is invited to a ribbon-cutting event to celebrate the completion of this park. It is the last of a series of ribbon cuttings we have done. There were a lot of parks this year that were completely developed and celebrated. And I look back, we did Duff Park and Northridge Heights Park, the skate park. We did a renaming and dedication and some improvements. We had talked about that as well. Just a really busy year for the Ames Park and Recreation Department. And it all sort of comes to an end today at noon with our final ribbon cutting of the season. Of course, we completely anticipate that we will continue to do park improvements going into 2017. But today is the last
for this year. Okay.
Gail, as you and I were talking earlier, it's Yard Waste Free Day coming up on Saturday, November 5th. It is the third Yard Waste Free Day of the season, and this one includes brush. I think there's been a little confusion. That brush day does change year to year. We try not to do it on the first Yard Waste Free Day because our vendor, Chamness Technology, needs to kind of get into place the right staffing levels. That brush day tends to be very, very busy. So remember, this Saturday, November 5th, is free yard waste day that includes brush. So that is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Chemnitz Technology. For most people, that'll be going south on University Boulevard. That turns into 530th Avenue, and you can find Chemnitz on the west side of the street there. So,
okay. Looking forward to that. I'm ready.
Yeah. You know, there tends to be. We just ask people to be patient if there's a bit of a backup. They really have it down pretty smoothly. We visited it this year and drove in. We got help unloading our yard waste.
Yeah, it's been great.
And we drove out. Has. So
I've been there each time.
Yeah. So we if you have feedback about your experience there, please let us know. Chemnitz also does some surveying of people who use the site. So feel free to fill out that survey because that information does get back to us. Some other things we have going on. This November is a good month for meetings. So we have a couple meetings about some pretty interesting studies that we have going on and projects we have going on. One of them is the Lincoln Way Corridor Study. We've come and talked about that study here before. That is really looking at Lincoln Way from east to west, and that is a major arterial in Ames. Lincoln Way cuts the city in half, and pretty much everybody drives Lincoln Way at some point of the day or some point of the week. It's hard to get around in Ames without being on Lincoln Way. There have been concerns that Lincoln Way doesn't maybe showcase Ames the way that we want to present ourselves. There's so many different uses for that. As you come in from the east, it's somewhat industrial. Mm-hmm. It becomes commercial, then residential. Then you go through the university, and as you head out west, it becomes commercial again. And that there may be underutilized pieces of land around that corridor, and that maybe there are some ways to improve it to make it look more aesthetically appealing. Anyway, if you have interest in participating in that study, we actually have some workshop sessions and focus groups planned for Thursday, November 10th. So those will be at the Ames Public Library. There are three of them scheduled. From 1 to 3, 4 to 6, and 6 to 8 p.m.
And that's on the 10th?
On Thursday, November 10th.
All three on the 10th. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All at the Ames Public Library. They are divided into subsections. The first one is the Downtown Gateway Focus Area. That's the 1 to 3. From 4 to 6, it's Campus Town Transition and West Side Mixed Use Focus Areas. That's from 4 to 6. And from 6 to 8 p.m. is the Lincoln Way and Grand Avenue, as well as the Oak to Riverside focus areas. So this is a study that actually started sometime in January or February of this year, and is really getting closer to wrapping up. We did know it was going to be about a year-long project, and it looks at priorities, identifying potential infill housing, maybe commercial development opportunities, streetscape, and transportation enhancements. Again, this is a street that most people are familiar with and may have some thoughts on how to improve it. So,
So changes to that could have a big impact in many ways. So people should come out and
And this is just the planning, the planning study to look at maybe what we might want to move towards. Mm-hmm. So Thursday, November 10th, please mark your calendar. The next day, Friday, November 11th, we just remind people that that is Veterans Day. And City Hall and most city departments will be closed that day. We do have a couple exceptions to the rules. Obviously, our police and fire department are never closed, always on duty. Our community center, located in City Hall, which is our gym area, will be open regular hours. SciRide buses do run a regular weekday schedule on Veterans Day. And the Ames Public Library will remain open and maintain its regular hours. Finally, the Resource Recovery Plant offices will be closed, but the plant will be open for regular service if you need to drop things, if you're using the floor to drop off garbage.
Do you know if parking meters are in effect? People always wonder. People often come in here and ask us that.
Actually, I believe if you look on the meter itself, it says excluding holidays.
But, so that would be counted as a holiday?
That would be, since
we think.
Susan, I would assume, since the city recognizes it.
The city does recognize Veterans Day as a holiday. The one confusing holiday is Martin Luther King Day because the city does not close for that day, and we are open and operating. And so while it is a holiday, it's not a holiday that the city is closed. So you have to be careful about. There is a few caveats, but on the meters it does tell you holidays and Sundays. And so Veterans Day is a holiday for the city of Ames. We do have another project, public input meeting coming up, North River Valley Park. There's been a low-head dam project for quite some time, identified as an area of improvement. The North River Valley Park low-head dam project was designed to enhance increase safety and enhance recreational features of the dam, which is located along the Skunk River, and I believe it's south of 13th Street. I'm asking Rudy because he knows everything.
It'd be on the north side, Susan.
The north side of 13th Street. I'm not a kayaker, but I have been to the dam now that I think about it. You're correct. It is north of 13th Street. This is a project that's kind of been looked at for quite some time to improve this area. The dam has been slated for improvements, but also to increase safety, but also for aesthetics. We really have a great project. We have an engineer's concept of what it could look like. Really attractive looking with some rocks in there to kind of break up the recirculation effect that you get from a dam. If you're a canoer or a kayak, you know that dams can be a danger. Mm-hmm. As we all know, there have been some really, really tragic kind of events with people getting trapped in those. And so this would be a way to break up that recirculation effect and allow people more access to the dam. There is a public input session scheduled from 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, November 16th. This one is also at the Ames Public Library. That's 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, November 16th, to show off the project, to show off the engineer's design, and to get some more input on that. Really a nice project. It would be a terrific amenity for future canoeists and kayakers to enjoy, as well as just people, visitors to the park, to it enables you to get a little bit closer to the river. So nice, nice project for the future, and I hope that people can make it there to that public input session. It's got a lot of interest already. A lot of people are kind of following this one, hoping that we can start building it. The plan would include construction late summer of 2017. So that one is still getting started, but hopefully moving forward soon. Another project we have going on, SciRide, our public transit system, has seen with the increase in students and the increase just in the population of Ames has really, really grown. It's really a very large transit system in the number of rides it provides for a city of our size. It really is something that is unusual across the country. We have growing millions of riders each year, and that number continues to grow. And SciRide has said they're looking at the system redesign to determine if the current routes and schedules are the most efficient way of delivering service. As they have grown, those routes and those schedules may not have kept up with the growth as well as they would have wanted, or maybe as well as the public would have wanted. So SciRide is seeking feedback to change the public transit system to accurately reflect the needs of the ridership. They have done several on-site visits around campus, around the community. One way that's still available to voice your opinion is to go online and take the SciRide survey. They are taking input on that survey through Friday, November 18th. The survey, and I've actually taken the survey. It's kind of fun. It basically gives you a amount of money, and you get to decide what things are important to you. You get to buy on the survey. You pick the services that are important, and each of the services has a cost.
Huh.
So if you want more frequent service, you have to take money out of your bank and pay for those. And if you want extended routes, you have to – and if you go over your bank amount, they say nope. And so it's kind of a fun interactive survey to take.
Yeah, that's a clever way to set up a survey. Makes it more interesting.
And so it really makes you prioritize the things that you find are the most important. And by having a cost associated with each one of those things that you want, you can see how it's important to decide if you want this and this and this. Mm-hmm. You probably aren't going to be able to afford all of them. So which one is the most important to you? Again, that link is off the SciRide website. You can find it at http://sciridesurvey.com. You can also find it at sciride.com and just look for the survey link.
Okay. We can put a link to that from our website, too.
And then you can find it that way as well. So, again, that survey is up. Will be up on the website through Friday, November 18th. So I really encourage you to take a few minutes and participate in that survey, because your input is important and it will help direct the future of any improvements to CyRide. Just a reminder that Ames Park's water has been shut off to Ames Park's. So if you're a runner and you're used to stopping at Ada Hayden to get a drink, you need to sort of reroute yourself or take your water bottle with you, because it's getting colder.
Or it's supposed to be getting colder.
And, you know, we can't take the risk of having broken pipes. So we shut the water out. We drain the system. That actually was done at the end of October, which is pretty typical. That water will come back on in the spring when the ground warms up and we're sure that it's safe again to run the water through those systems. Something we do every year, we do sort of get some people who are surprised and will let us know, hey, the water's not working. Yeah, so just remember that's why. And one last thing, I just want to congratulate John Dunn, our Water and Pollution Control Director, who was recently honored with the Iowa section of the American Water Works Association's George Warren Fuller Award. It is one of the top water industry awards in the state, and he was recognized for his leadership. Our water plant, our water and pollution control department is in the middle of a large water treatment plant reconstruction. We're going to have a new water plant bringing us water by summer of 2017. So that is a huge project for that group, and we congratulate John Dunn for his leadership throughout this project.
A well-deserved honor, it sounds.
Yeah. So that really is the wrap-up for November.
Wow, you got through a lot. I'm impressed.
Yes.
Thank you both. We've been talking with Susan Guiazda and Rudy Castor from the City of Ames with their monthly updates. And this is Local Talk on KHOI. Thank you both for being here. And you always give us so much information but make it fun to listen to. So thanks for that effort.
You're welcome.
It's great to be here.
Okay. We also want to let our listeners know about next week's Heart of Iowa show on Thursday at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. KHOI reporter Kay Puttick interviewed author, researcher, activist, and patriotic millionaire Chuck Collins. As a grandson of the meatpacker and processor Oscar Mayer, Collins grew up in the 1% of wealthiest people in the United States. Or, as he says, he was born on third base and therefore didn't need to hit a triple. Here's a snippet of that interview.
Yeah, and you talk about putting compassionate pressure on the wealthy.
I think there is a segment of the wealthy that use their wealth and power to rig the rules, but it is a small, well-organized, resourced group. And then there's like the networks that I'm part of, like the Patriotic Millionaires, Wealth for the Common Good, the resource generation group. These are groups that are affluent, wealthy business leaders, people like me born on third base, who use their wealth to kind of try to build a more fair and just system. And then there's this large segment of people who are wealthy but are just disconnected. They're disengaged, just like most of society. So my point is, let's get smarter about how we think about inequality and where we might find potential allies in changing that.
But I know a change gonna come. town. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my. But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
This is Local Talk on KHOI. That song you just heard was Change Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. You also heard a segment from an interview that Kay Puttick did with Chuck Collins. Chuck Collins is the author of several books on wealth and income inequality in the U.S. and is the co-founder or founder of many initiatives, including Patriotic Millionaires. Kay interviewed him about his most recent and most personal book, Born on Third Base, A One Percenter Makes the Case for Tackling Inequality, Bringing Wealth Home, and Committing to the Common Good. That interview can be heard in its entirety next Thursday at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on KHOI. Early voting has been going on for several weeks in Iowa, and many listeners have probably already voted. For many of us, voting is relatively easy. It means finding the time and then getting to a polling place. But for people who don't drive, for example, people living in nursing homes or assisted living facilities, getting to a polling place may be impossible. So we're going to hear about efforts to ensure that these folks are able to cast their ballots for the candidates of their choice. Local Talk reporter Greta Anderson has a report from the Acura Skilled Nursing Facility in North Ames.
In a big election year such as this one, the Story County Auditor's Office relies on a lot of volunteers. Two of those volunteers, Joanne Wilkinson and Rosie Beer, work as a team. They've been busy all this week helping voters in nursing homes fill out their ballots. Here's Joanne Wilkinson.
We're one Democrat, one Republican.
And that's pretty important, I would think.
Oh, it is, yes. It has to. We can't have anything without both of us being there. So.
What kind of assistance do you sometimes provide the voters?
We put out the ballot, and she explains it to them, and we work as a team. We're a good team.
You've been at this together for a few years now.
Yes, we have. And we're both toying with the idea this may be the last year. It's getting harder and harder.
In what way?
Well, there's more people. It's surprising how many people want to vote. Before, we just had just a few, but now, the packet's clear full, and those are all ballots right there. So,
in fact, 16 of the residents of the nursing home I visited had requested an absentee ballot this election cycle. Brenda Smith, the activities director of Acura Healthcare in North Ames, tries to make the experience resemble regular precinct voting as closely as possible. Each voter enters the break room one at a time, where they meet with Joanne and Rosie to fill out their ballots in private. The two teammates then return the ballots to the auditor's office.
And so they get the feel of an actual, like they're going to the poll to vote instead of sending a card back in the mail. They're going to find volunteers from the Story County Auditor's Office friendly ladies who have been coming for the last 3 years, and they'll help them through the process, and they get to actually make their little check marks on their voting card and sign their name, and they voted. Then they get a little sticker so that I voted today.
It is Iowa law that this drama be played out. Section 53.22 of Iowa Code regards balloting by confined persons. If three or more residents of the same care facility request an absentee ballot, two special precinct officers, one from each party, must visit the facility together and assist with filling out the ballots. Here at Acura, all of the residents can walk or be wheeled to the polling location, but in other cases, the patients must be visited in bed. It's obvious that this service means a lot to the residents. I spoke with Ivan Nelson, who's lived at the facility for less than a year. So this is probably the first time you've voted here.
Yes, it is, yes.
But not the first time you've voted.
Oh, I always vote.
So what does it mean for you to be able to just to walk down the hallway and cast a ballot?
Well, it's going to be different because I've always had to get in the car and go somewhere and do that. But this is, it's very simple.
Do you know which way you're going to cast your ballot today?
Pretty much.
Okay. Well, I won't ask you.
No. I wouldn't even tell.
Kathy Hobbs, also a resident, does this every year. Your name?
Kathy Hobbs.
And you are waiting in line in the hallway here at Acura, formerly Riverside Nursing Home. What does today mean to you?
Freedom. I think it's beautiful that people get a vote for who our leaders are, and the people will decide for themselves who their leaders are, and it's not a communistic vote or any of that, but we decide for ourselves.
Do you ever talk politics here at the nursing home with other folks?
Yes, once in a while we will.
It doesn't get loud and argumentative, does it?
Oh, at times it does, but we just realize it's just people voicing their opinion.
Are you going to tell me who you're going to vote for?
Hillary Clinton.
Do you have anything to say about Hillary?
Well, she's got good ideas. She's for the people, and she's been in politics for a long, long time.
I've got something.
She was in with whenever Bill was president. She knows a lot what's going on from him, and they're going to be together doing good for everybody. And I'm just happy she's running.
I saw them yesterday.
It's clear that volunteers like Joanne Wilkinson and Rosie Veer are vital to the functioning of our democracy. At KHOI, we salute their community spirit and encourage others to follow suit. Does it hurt when you see a resident fill in the opposite party to you?
No, not at all. No, no.
So what do you like best about seeing people in this way every November?
We try to be friendly. And usually they are friendly, and so, yeah, we like to help people, right?
Thanks to Greta Anderson, a local talk reporter, for that story from the Acura Skilled Nursing Facility in North Ames. Hearing how important voting is to those people should inspire all of us to make sure we go out and vote. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Gail Seiler. As we all know, Election Day is almost here, and next Wednesday, the day after the election, Local Talk will bring you a special post-election show. It will be informative, but it will also breathe some lightness into your post-election emotions, whatever they might be. So be sure to listen to Local Talk on the morning after. We're going to have another song now. That was a local band called Strong Like Bear with the song Seeking Ghosts. We had another guest lined up for you for this part of the show, but so far they haven't arrived yet, so we have to improvise here a little bit. I did want to maybe update people on the racist white supremacist posters that were put up on ISU's campus in various places last Thursday. They were taken down, and the administration sent out an email to staff and students and faculty explaining why the posters were down. Many people saw that response as relatively weak because it addressed the fact that the posters didn't meet guidelines for facilities usage. The email maybe didn't address the concern with the actual posters very much. So there's been a lot of action on campus. I know in the School of Education there were some meetings yesterday. There was a meeting yesterday, and students are going to be taking some action on it. There's been a number of letters written. People just concerned about the overall campus climate and how the posters both fuel the negative climate towards people who are non-white and represent what's happening in that climate. So both as a stimulus and as a symptom. There also was an incident that a student reported, a Latino student, this past weekend, I believe, where they were outside Jeff's Pizza waiting in line to get pizza. And a number of white students, actually it sounded like a fairly large number, were chanting, "Build the wall, build the wall." This was 1 a.m. in the morning and made a number of students of color feel very uncomfortable. And they decided to leave and go get pizza somewhere else. So it's clear that there are issues around the climate. The posters, again, symbolize that and perhaps fuel that. The administration responded, but many people, as with last year's response to the incident at the Cyhawk game, many people, both students, staff, and faculty, are not content with the reaction of the administration so far. So we're going to be covering this and try to get more comments from the administration, find out more what student groups, faculty groups, et cetera, are doing to try to continue to raise this issue. So look forward to hearing more about that on KHOI. I know we're putting together some stories on that will be aired next week. But that's just an update from my perspective as a professor in the School of Education at ISU. People are also kind of making the connection with the unfortunate murders of the police in Des Moines, because the person, I think he's been charged now with those murders, has had tendencies toward white supremacy with the use of the Confederate flag at a football game and having to be asked to leave because kind of taunting people of color at the game with a Confederate flag. So it just seems like this climate, whether it's related to the election and rhetoric that's going on around the election, we don't know. But it seems like this climate is becoming more public and more overt and needs to be dealt with, because a number of people I know on campus are feeling unsafe and threatened by that climate. We're still waiting for our guests. It looks like they're not going to make it. So in lieu of the interview that we were going to have, we're going to listen to a bit of our Politics is Local show that was aired yesterday. We've been airing this show on Thursday mornings and Saturday mornings in the weeks leading up to the election. And yesterday's had a number of interesting segments, one of which was audio of the Grassley judge debate for the Senate seat. And that wasn't aired in our locality of central Iowa, so we thought we would air it on the radio. So let's listen to a segment of that for our audience now.
This is Politics is Local, a special election time series of KHOI Community Radio. This week we bring you predictions and analysis summarizing where we are headed as a state in Iowa on the eve of Tuesday's election. Blogger Laura Bellin shares her understanding of what has been affecting Iowa's choices. First, however, we bring you portions of a debate for the U.S. Senate between Iowa candidate Republican incumbent Charles Grassley and his challenger Democrat Patty Judge. The debate was held at Morningside College in Sioux City, Iowa. We thank KTIV for sharing this recording. This show will be aired again on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. and can also be found on our webpage, khoifm.org.
So let's meet the candidates for the U.S. Senate seat representing the great state of Iowa.
Charles Grassley is a six-term U.S. Senator who was first elected in 1981. Before that, Grassley served three terms in the U.S. House of Representatives. Prior to that, he served in the Iowa House of Representatives.
Patty Judge is the former Lieutenant Governor of Iowa. Judge also served 8 years as Iowa Ag Secretary. She also served in the Iowa Senate.
The first opening statement goes to Patty Judge.
Thank you, Matt. We have an opportunity tonight to talk about issues that are important, issues that are on the minds of people not just in Iowa, but across our country. We know that there is frustration, there is gridlock and obstruction in Washington, D.C. We know that needs to change. And in order for that to change, I believe that we need to have new leadership. The obstruction of the Supreme Court for the last several months is unprecedented. That is on my opponent's shoulders. We need to be trying to find ways to move forward. We need to be working on the economy. We need to be talking about student loan debt, making certain that young professionals aren't buried under mountains of debt. We need to talk about Social Security. There are issues up and down the scale that need to be discussed that are not being discussed. I hope that we have a chance to do that. I go to Washington, work for you to make the progress, make this country move again. Thank you.
Senator Grassley.
Thank you very much. Every day, my job is to work for Iowans. If the senators from Iowa don't work for Iowans, no one else will. I think in terms of three approaches to working for Iowans. Number one, jobs like the wind energy tax credit, 7,000 jobs, export-related jobs, pay 15% above the national average. Secondly, taxpayers of Iowa need accountability for their money. So I get the False Claims Act passed. That has brought $48 billion back into the federal treasury. And then lastly, national security and economic security, because national security is the number one responsibility of the federal government to keep Iowans safe from ISIS and terrorism, and also economic security. The failed policies of the last 8 years of no growth have to be supplemented with a pro-growth policy, and that's what I've been doing over the last few years, these three things. I intend to continue them if I'm reelected, and I would very much appreciate your vote.
Thank you, Senator. Now the questions from our panel. The first question focuses on the nomination of Judge Merrick Garland to the U.S. Supreme Court. Senator Grassley, since Judge Garland's nomination, you have opposed convening confirmation hearings. Just last month, though, you said you would consider hearings during a lame duck session after Election Day. Why, sir, soften your stance?
I will not change my position from my February 23rd letter that the people ought to have a voice, and the new president, whether it's Trump or Mrs. Clinton, will make the next appointment as far as I'm concerned. The reason we did not have a hearing, and 52 other senators agreeing with that, we have taken the position that's similar to what Democratic senators have taken when there's been Republican presidents, three different ones, and the point that they made that you, if in the last year of a presidential term, if a vacancy happens then, you have people give a choice, and they go ahead and let the new president make it. So you can't have one rule for Democrat presidents and another rule for Republican presidents, so we're being very consistent.
To be specific, those other 52 senators that you mentioned, if they were to change their minds and favored confirmation hearings during a lame duck session, not to say that you would support it, but would you consider it?
If a majority of the Senate said that they were going to move ahead, a chairman serves at the majority of the Senate of the United States, and I would follow the will of the majority of the Senate.
Thank you,
Senator. I don't expect that to happen, though.
Mrs. Judge, yes. The question, as consistently as Senator Grassley has opposed the confirmation hearings, you've advocated for them. I want to take you back to June of 1992. As a U.S. Senator, Vice President Joe Biden talked hypothetically about postponing those hearings on any Supreme Court vacancy, should there be one, until after the election of that year in November of 1992. Given your advocacy for hearings about Judge Garland's nomination, do you then believe the Vice President of the United States, one of the leaders of your party, was wrong 26 years ago?
Well, I believe that we now have the longest time in the history of this country between a nomination and a hearing, and that is unprecedented. I believe that it is hampering the court. We have a court that is not able to function as it was designed by the Constitution. We have disrupted the balance of power. Joe Biden said in the halls of Congress at some time, if that in fact is his view, that is not my view. I believe that the duty of the Judiciary Committee is to have a hearing, and my opponent is refusing to do that. It should be done, and I am really tonight troubled with this answer about a lame duck session. It sure appears to me that he's leaving himself some wiggle room so that they can have a hearing for Judge Garland between the time this election is over and Hillary Clinton takes office.
1968, there was a vacancy. The Democrat Senate decided not to fill the vacancy. I presume they thought Humphrey was going to be elected. Nixon was elected. Nixon appointed two new people to the Supreme Court. So consequently, even in 2007, Schumer said 18 months ahead of time, if there's a vacancy, it should be filled by the new one. And then in 2005, Reid gave a speech in which he said there's nothing in the Constitution that says the Senate has to move ahead. That's the checks and balances of our government.
My response is that this is wrong. This is obstruction of the process. We have a Supreme Court that is unable to function. This is exactly what's wrong with Washington. This is why people are angry, because instead of getting to work, doing what should be done, we are playing political games in Washington, D.C., and it has to stop.
There's nothing wrong with the checks and balances in our Constitution. The President nominates, the Senate confirms, or advises and consents, or not to consent, as they choose to do based upon what Senator Reid, the Democratic leader, said in 2005.
You know, we can talk about what somebody said. The truth of the matter is, we have not had a functioning court for months. We will not have a functioning court for many more months. That is wrong. That is political games. Whether it's being played by the Republicans or the Democrats, it is wrong and it needs to stop.
The next question will focus on the Affordable Care Act. And, Mrs. Judge, you recently admitted that the health insurance and other costs remain extremely unaffordable, despite having the Affordable Care Act. And you favor legislative changes to lower those costs, but you've never outlined those changes. Do you have recommendations tonight?
Well, I think the Affordable Care Act was clearly a step forward for our country. We are providing health insurance today for millions of people that did not have it before, that's good. We do need to make some changes to the Act. We do not need to do what my opponent has tried to do several times, and that is to get the Act repealed and replace it with what, I don't know, because there's never been an alternative put forward. But we do need to look at that. We need to be finding a way to control the rising costs of premiums. We need to be finding a way to control the cost of prescription drugs. That was left out on purpose. Again, my opponent was part of that decision, and people have been paying a price in this country ever since for extremely high cost prescription drugs. I believe these things can be done. We can make this act work, and this country will be better because of that.
Can you elaborate on any specific changes that you would recommend?
Well, we need to examine closely what is driving insurance costs and then make decisions on how we can curb that. This was part of the reason that we instituted the Affordable Care Act, because insurance premiums kept rising and people were not able to get coverage, and then they also were being thrown off of insurance coverage when they had a serious illness.
We've been lied to about Obamacare. Remember, your premiums were supposed to go down $2,500. They've gone up $3,500. Remember, if you like your doctor, you can keep it. Millions of people have had to change their doctors. Remember that we were promised to keep your insurance. And in turn, then millions of people have had to change their insurance.
I don't think that the more than a million people who have insurance coverage today that did not have before the Affordable Care Act, I don't think that the young professionals who have not yet established themselves in a career and have insurance of their own that are now allowed to stay on their parents' policies would call this a failure. This is a big step forward. It is not perfected. We need to, again, put the partisan politics down, quit playing games, and find a way to make this work.
A lot of small businesses around the country wanted, instead of providing insurance, wanted to give their people money to buy insurance. Obamacare ruled that out. If you violate that law, you're going to pay $200 every day for every employee that violates that. I have put in legislation to repeal that part of Obamacare. We should encourage as many small businesses that want to help their people get insurance anyway to get it.
That was a segment of the debate between Republican Senator Chuck Grassley and his opponent for Iowa's Senate seat, Democrat Patty Judge. You can hear more of that debate on a rebroadcast of Politics is Local tomorrow morning on KHOI. As I said, that debate was not made available on TV in central Iowa, so that's your chance to hear it, a very important debate. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to our guests, Susan Guiazda and Rudy Castor from the City of Ames, and thanks to Greta Anderson for the report on voting at the Acura Skilled Nursing Facility in North Ames. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's show on all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find contact information and links for the people and places we talked about. Local Talk was engineered by Vincent Valeriano. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard Seeking Ghosts by Strong Like Bear and Change is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. You can become a member or donate at any time on our website. Just look for the donate button. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can be part of the team of volunteer producers and reporters. Contact us at 292-2878. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporters are what make KHOI possible and meaningful. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.